You're listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast, where we shine light on the dark side of Christianity and how it affects people and communities. I'm Robin Mitchell Stroud, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Levy Martinelli. We'll be covering a variety of topics, from individual survivor stories, including our own, to the influence of religion on our national politics. To learn more about the podcast, visit our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or connect with us on TikTok and Instagram at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. Now, on to the show.
OM Goddess people, have we got a great guest for you today. Kenlyn Colleen is a spiritual empowerment and business coach, author, speaker, and host of the Divine Feminine Summit, which we'll talk about more shortly. A former attorney who graduated at the top of her class at Notre Dame, Kenlyn left the corporate world to pursue spiritual laws of higher truth. Her journey took her to India to meet His Holiness the Dalai Lama and to complete Kundalini yoga teacher training. Kenlyn has served on the board of Free a Child in Nepal and launched the first youth anti-trafficking program in Denver, Colorado. She is the author of The Art of Turning 50, A Woman's Guide to a Radiant and Authentic Life, and maintains a private coaching and speaking practice. She also teaches yoga in Encinitas, California, and online. Kenlyn leads retreats, runs women's leadership and empowerment circles, and coaches women privately so that they can, as she says, embody their radiance, live their purpose, and make a big impact on behalf of the planet. You can find her online at kenlyncolleen.com and on Instagram at Evolving Sisters. Welcome, Kenlyn.
Welcome, Kenlyn.
Hello. So good to be here.
Good to have you here. And listeners, we first came to know Kenlyn while participating in the Divine Feminine Summit last summer. It's a 3-day online event that gathered women and some men from all around the world, and it featured women speakers from different religious and spiritual traditions, and it was amazing. And Kenlyn, I've shared it with Deborah, but the most profound moment of the summit for me was when one of the speakers led a meditation for healing our inner child. Oh my gosh, my voice is shaky even talking about this. Healing our inner child, and I cried through the whole thing. And that was very surprising to me because I had done so much healing work around inner child wounds that I was surprised that there was all of this deep emotion coming up. And so the meditation was good for me because it revealed that I had some more soul homework to do, as I call it. But that led me to, because I realized I had more work to do and I wanted to go deeper, I signed up for Kenlyn's Divine Feminine Inner Circle Group, which is similar to this summit, but it's like deeper and sustained over a period of months instead of days. And then I took advantage of your Feminine Business Mastermind Group and some of your private coaching, which is how the Incarcerated Christian Podcast came to be, because the podcast was Kenlyn's idea. So thank you for that. I thank you. I'm very grateful to you, and we are grateful to you for that. It's just like all of these little spirit crumbs that I just kind of followed to kind of get to where we are now.
And it was, Robin, also during one of your private coaching sessions with Kenlyn that you were surprised to learn that your religious backgrounds overlap, right?
That's right. Yes, I actually was very surprised to learn that our backgrounds overlap. Kenlyn even attended ORU, Oral Roberts University in Oklahoma. So she's not just on here because it was her idea for the podcast. She's on here because she's like me. There's a whole transformation journey. And so Kenlyn, this is what, you know that we are hoping you will share like what that journey was for you. Kind of starting at the beginning, starting with your background. Where you grew up, how you grew up, what church you attended, kind of like just the story. And then we'll jump in with questions. I know that's like a big avenue, big lane we just gave you. But really, it's how you grew up and then how you moved from that to where you are now, which is all about the divine feminine. So jump in there anywhere, Kenlyn.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, first, I have to acknowledge you two, Robin and Deborah, for taking action. I really wouldn't even call it my idea, because I believe that so many ideas in the space in between. And so in that sacred contract between me and Robin, this idea emerged and there was energy to it. And what I love about Robin is she's just on it. So you just made it happen. And here I am. So as a coach, it's really beautiful to be able to sit, and it's so gratifying to be able to sit and see the fruition of just not only ideas, but like Dharma, a person's Dharma, a person like calling, what you're meant to do here. Dharma is a yogic word, and calling may be more of a Christian word, but I really feel that with you too. So I'm delighted to be here, and I'll pick up that ball. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in a fundamentalist, I call it a fundamentalist Christian home. It's evangelical fundamentalist. The fundamentalist part, like the nuances of that, came when I realized that my parents, particularly my father, who's like an eschatologist, end times-ish, whatever you ever say that. And he's a teacher of the Book of Revelations. And what I noticed about fundamentalism, and I think Martin Marty at the University of Chicago talked about fundamentalism. And I only know this because my ex-husband was a church historian at Notre Dame, getting his PhD at the time I was getting my law degree. And I learned that fundamentalism kind of cherry picks the parts of scripture that work for them and leave out the other parts that are not maybe as resonant. And some of those parts could be like, love your neighbor as yourself, or
yeah, it could
be like, take the log out of your own eye before you start to take the log out of someone else's eye, or unconditional love, this notion of unconditional love. So I just started to notice that. So that's my background. And prior to that, my dad was really nothing. And my mother was in the Catholic Church. She tells me that before she got married and I was born, she wanted to become a nun.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's kind of the lineage. Yeah. And then she gets married and somewhere, I think around my age of seven or something, my mom is introduced to Pentecostalism at the Catholic Church and starts speaking in tongues. And somehow that was exciting for my dad. That enrolled my dad in charismatic Christianity. So here I have fundamentalism, and I've got evangelicalism, and then I've got Pentecostalism. And I had gone to a Catholic church when I was little, and then all of a sudden we shifted over to a more independent charismatic church. And that became the majority of my upbringing. And then really when I was going to college, my dad found Oral Roberts and was like, this is a dream. You know, they've got small classes, they have a religious, spiritual ethos, and you get really individualized attention. And my best friend from youth group was going, so we became roommates there. So it was just a really easy transition. But one of my professors at ORU, he was in the political science department, Dr. David Morgan. It's awesome how you can recall things when you need them. But he was an incredible philosopher teacher, and he really taught me the essence of critical thinking. And he said that a lot of people leave ORU to the dismay of their parents in a completely different way than they went in to ORU. And I kind of credited the fact that I went there with this ability of safety. So I felt safe. And because I felt safe, I felt safe to question. I think as a young person, if I had gone to Berkeley, for example, I would have just hunkered down on my beliefs and fought. I was a fighter, and I would have just fought.
Because you would have been defending your faith.
Yeah, exactly. And so there started my journey of questioning. And, you know, I think I'm going to just fast forward it to post ORU and post law. I went to Notre Dame Law School. So it again was another religious institution, which felt comforting. I had no resistance to being there. We went to my ex-husband was a Calvinist. So, you know, here, there's just so many
right
flavors of conservative Christianity, really. It really wasn't until he and I got a divorce after we moved to Washington, D.C., when I graduated from law school and started practicing. It was kind of like if I, you know, take the 10,000-foot view of my life, my number was called. And I began this cracking open period. And the divorce was a catalyst for that. And that was that's the initiation of my spiritual journey. And with that, because I was in technology law, that took me to Boulder, Colorado. And in Boulder, if you know anything about Boulder, Colorado, it's just at the time, the early 2000s, it's just a mecca of healing, different modalities, all the spiritual teachers, this is before the internet really, and all the spiritual teachers made their way through there. So I began to, Shambhala Mountain Center is there. So I sat with Tibetan Buddhists, I sat with Hindus, I sat with non-dual spiritual teachers. I just kind of did it all because I was really cracked open. And just actually cried a lot because I like talk about that childhood wound thing. And so I was just searching for really not just a context to which to make sense, but I was searching for the truth in my own heart. And I'll just say that there's a lot in between. And then at some level, the initiations continued, and it's brought me to where I am today to be this spokesperson for the divine feminine. I'm going to stop there and let you all.
No, it's fascinating because I think it's interesting that you said that if you had gone to like a UCLA or something or Berkeley or whatever, you would feel like, or that you would feel more defensive and kind of hold on to your upbringing, but being in the conservative environment let you be freer to ask questions. Did you experience cognitive dissonance around that? Like, did you feel guilty for asking questions? Did you feel like you were doing something wrong or bad?
Well, that's a good question. I don't remember feeling that way because I was really lit up by this professor.
Sort of gave you permission to ask questions. He's an authoritative figure at the college. I just find that fascinating.
And really smart. And that was what I was attracted to. And so we would go to chapel. So first of all, this is my precursor to being a lawyer. I edited the honor code. You know, we call it redlining. And when you edit contracts, you redline them. So this is before I got there and I saw the honor code. Oral Roberts had, you know, written honor code, and they were handed to us in chapel. And I remember crossing things out and then, you know, doing that little thing and adding in my own sentence, you know, and I fully expected to get called into the office on that, but I don't think anybody reads any of that stuff. So at least I kept my own integrity.
You are redlining the honor code. Can you give us an example of something that you scratched out and something that you added in?
I really don't remember.
We had to wear
skirts, and you know, there were some things obviously that I wasn't going to be able to redline out, but there could have been things around like who I am and the energy that I bring to it. And these are my words now; it wouldn't have been my words before. But just, you know, so I think there was always a kind of a rebel in there, and I have since learned to be more flexible in my mind. You know, I used to preach at my church at 16 years old. And so I was very dogmatic and I didn't have any experience. Or really what the divine feminine is about is the embodiment of truth. And what I teach now is how do we feel truth in our bodies? And Christianity, in my experience, at least that type of Christianity, I'm not talking about mystic Christianity or spiritual Christianity, mysticism. I'm talking about like that dogmatic Christianity that has, that feels a need to defend a belief system. And that to me is quintessentially disembodied. We're then popped up to our heads and we're now fighting for a position. Hence, we get all the fighting in the world. And that's actually a low worldview. If you look at Ken Wilber's worldview, that's kind of the amber worldview. It's like me and my people and we're right and everyone else should die. And that, what he says about worldviews is that worldviews are included, but they're transcended. So you can't bypass a worldview. You got to go through it. So I think that in my trajectory of going through that worldview, I was there and I was dogged. But what my spiritual awakening taught me is that I was totally disconnected to my heart and I felt bankrupt and I felt like starving. And my experience now of spirituality and the divine feminine is the embodiment. Like, I don't have to leave my body at the table. The body is taught as being such an evil thing because it leads to carnal desires, as the big taboo. You can't trust the body because it's just going to want to have sex with everyone.
Yeah. Especially a woman's body. Can't trust
that. Especially a woman's body. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And we can go all the way back to blaming it on Eve and
yes,
and all the spiritual patriarchy that has created a mythology around shoving the feminine into, into the corner, into the shadows. And what we've done as a result is we become walking heads, shoving our truth into the corner and starving ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But how did you even make that transition? Because our backgrounds are so heavily patriarchal. You know, I remember one time we had our kids in church and the kids were in Sunday school and, you know, they joined the adults in big church. And I leaned down to ask our eldest kiddo, you know, how was it? And to his credit, August leaned back over and said, I asked the teacher just kept talking about Father God, Father God. And I asked the teacher, well, what about Mother God? And the teacher said, there isn't one. And then Augie looked at me and said, can you believe that? Like, I was like, yes, yes. Thank you for challenging that notion. But it wouldn't have even occurred to me that there was a divine feminine concept growing up because there just wasn't one. And, you know.
Yeah, she's been written out.
She's been written out. So how did you even make the journey from where you were to the divine feminine? Like what were those little things in between?
Yeah, those are questions that we look back on our life because it certainly wasn't something that my conscious mind was driving toward. It was just, I think if anything, what I can say now is that my awakening was driving me toward truth and toward integration, that my feeling body and that my lived experience and that the intelligence contained in my body get to be included in my spirituality. And that's just me putting words onto something, but really what was happening was the disintegration and, you know, talk about the dark night of the soul. I keep thinking of Andrew Harvey while I'm talking, and I think he said something like he talked about the dark night of the soul, but he also talked about that prayer, Our Father, how different the world would be if the prayer was Our Mother who art in heaven. So just considering, I mean, the Gnostics have the divine feminine in the Gnostic Gospels. There are mystic Christianity that includes the feminine and understands Mary Magdalene in a different way, understands the Mother Mary in a different way. But, you know, you can understand how threatening the feminine was to the patriarchy. And so the patriarchy just had to cut her out. And so each woman today, and even the masculine today, gets to go on the journey of reuniting with her and his hearts. And that requires that journey back into the feminine part of ourselves, because the feminine is the embodiment. Like the word mater is mother, it's matter, it's the feminine, you know. Paternal, pater, is like pattern. So it's like the matter and the patterns together make us, and we're both masculine and feminine. And we've just starved ourselves, because the masculine in this world of domination and force, and the way that even we, you know, that's on the global level, and think about the way we live our lives and do our work in the world and how we force our way through and how we don't feel held. That's just a cutting off from the feminine. So I think I, looking back on it, just began a period of shedding and shedding and shedding. And, you know, I say like to people, I pretty much cried for like 10 years. You know, I had lots of body work. I did a 10 series in Rolfing, and, you know, they take the fascial tissue on all over your body, but particularly right over my heart. And I remember the practitioner just like spreading that fascial tissue over my heart. I left that session and I cried for 48 hours straight. It was just like opening to my heart. Like, I hadn't been connected, and it wasn't okay inside my family dynamic to be connected to my heart. So that's how I eventually made my way back to her, to she, to that which I am.
That is so beautiful. What did you call that technique? Rolfing?
Yeah.
R-O-L-F-I-N-G? Rolfing. Okay. I've never heard of that. So I'm going to go check that out.
As I understand it, and Kenlyn, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard it in general terms as a very, very deep tissue and muscular massage, if you will. But it's really transformative, like it was for you. And people have highly emotional responses to Rolfing.
Yeah. Another word for it is structural integration. Yeah. The difference between Rolfing and massage is that it's more on the fascial tissue. So if you imagine the fascia covering those muscles, but they don't have the space in between. So it's like dislodging them from being calcified and stuck. So think about how the body keeps the score. So the body understands even your ancestral trauma. All of it is contained in your body from your cellular DNA that was passed down through your lineage. It's in your body. So once we start breaking up that fascial tissue in the body, like, a lot of that stuff comes to the surface. And I didn't have an awareness of what that was. I didn't have a memory or anything of abuse. I just couldn't stop crying. And I had already known that crying was good. It's like very efficient. It just gets to the heart of the matter and dissolves it. So I certainly allowed it. And the yogis say, someone told me this. I never read a text that said this, but someone said, you know, you have a certain number of tears. And so I was gratified that I was getting, you know, just chinking away at the number of tears that I had to really fully experience, maybe even the grief mm-hmm. of being disconnected from my true self.
Mm-hmm. That's what that's the word I was thinking of as I was listening to you describe it, as grief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In that process of shedding, I did do a lot of things. I said yes to a lot of things. And one of the things I said yes to was, on my 40th birthday, I went to Peru and I stayed in the jungle and did ayahuasca for a week. And that was not popular then. I had seen it on a National Geographic Adventure magazine on the internet, and this woman had gone to get to the core of why she was having migraine headaches. And they said that like one session on this medicine plant would be equal to 5 years in therapy. And I had already done like 5 years of therapy. So I was ready for the fast track. So I went to Peru and did the medicine. And one particular, I had celiac, and I was being healed of celiac through the medicine. It was telling me that. So I never threw up. It's a purge, and it has you throw up a lot or have diarrhea. But there was one instance that I did throw up, and I was outside and the jungle was very 3D and I was listening to the sounds, and I heard the words in my head, "You are going to hell." And wow. I threw up.
Oh.
And the shaman said, when you throw up, you go, you know, have a context, an intention of what you're throwing away. Mm-hmm. And that was my father's voice. And I thought to myself, after so much work, so I had already by then been on the spiritual path for like maybe 8 years and done all these things, including the Rolfing. And 8 years later, deep within my psyche comes up, you are going to hell. And so I feel myself completely, that was my get out of jail card.
Yeah.
I became free. I was like wiped. It felt like my neuro net was wiped of any guilt, any residual underlying feeling that, and I think many people some of my family members, friends who have been in that tradition have spoken of, they just felt like they were doing something wrong if they were doing all these experimental things. And I feel like my neuro net just got wiped of that conditioning and I became free.
That is amazing. And I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is that we had a guest on, David Hayward. Did you think about this, Deborah, whenever Kenlyn was talking about the throwing up part? He did a cartoon that was exactly that. And I think he called it purge. And it was what the person was throwing up were things kind of like what you said, but like John 3:16 and like all of these religious symbols that had traumatized him. So I think that's fascinating. The other thing is that we have spoken with more than one person for whom one experience with one of those medicinal plants, ayahuasca or something like that, just made a huge difference. Someone even used the word like ego death. You know, it's just like you just kind of... And then there is a pretty long time respected professor of religion that's retired from the university now, but he and his wife are both ministers. And they said everybody should have that experience once because it's profound. And so I'm so happy to hear that that worked for you.
Yeah. And Deborah, I'll succeed in a second. I wanted to just say that I really feel like you have a knowing when it's your time to do it, you know, because it's so super popular now, at least in the circles I run in. And I feel that it's best to go with when you know your time is up, that this medicine is for you, because it's quite a journey. It can really rock you, but again, it can also really serve you.
I'm curious, Kenlyn, as you were going through all of this, even during that 8-year period, or maybe it was longer than that, what was the rest of your life like, your professional life, for example? Were you still practicing law? Had you left law? What was going on?
Good question.
Yeah, I was an attorney practicing law, and then I got, my ex-boyfriend used to say, I got scholarshiped by the universe. And I think sometimes that kind of a thing, it happens to us. So I got laid off. It was at the beginning of that .com. And I got some money and I got laid off, and that and other things that came together to kind of scholarship me allowed me to focus on this disintegration, really. But yeah, I mean, I still had things. I still got to get up every day and do things. So I was a lawyer. I worked on contract, not at the law firm anymore. And by the way, at the law firm, my partner at the law firm in my group was also interested in spirituality. And he had a friend who was organizing a trip to go to India and meet His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And I went on that trip. And that was when I discovered that India was my homeland. And when I got there, it was chaotic and it was dark and noisy and all these people were wanting something from us. And we stepped outside into the parking lot. And I remember having an overwhelming feeling and tears in my eyes that I am home. And that really surprised me. But that was an incredible, we did meet His Holiness, and the purity, the transmission of the purity was so beautiful from him. So that happened, and then I left the law firm and practiced on my own. And I also ran an organization. India got me seeing that child sex trafficking was a thing. I saw how that could happen. And so I came home to Boulder and I knew I was going to devote myself to that cause. And I opened up the Boulder County Business Report and I saw a picture of two women, and they had started an organization called Free a Child to fight child sex trafficking. The kids that were, and women that were being lured from small villages in Nepal over the border into India, thinking they were having a job at a factory and really going into a brothel. So I just said, I called them up and said, "You're not going to believe this, but I'm supposed to work with you." And they said, "We believe it." And I've been friends with them ever since. So I was doing things like that, as well as disintegrating, as you know, you can do both.
I have so many questions for you. What did your family think?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Fundamentalists are also compartmentalizers. So yeah. I have the benefit of my dad being a compartmentalizer. So I don't think he really thinks about that. Like they don't, at least now, you know, having been over 20 years, they don't think of me going to hell. At least they don't share that where maybe they would have way back then in their more zealous moments. But I also don't have a feeling like I don't really, I just am who I am now. I don't have a reverse notion to proselytize them because I don't believe in a thing. Like there's not a construct I believe in. And that's the freedom that I have. It's not a reverse dogma. It's more a way of being, and it's a liberation of my spirit and my beingness. And so I notice that in my family dynamic, I live a certain way that others don't live, but they maybe just chalk it up to me doing my thing. Like I don't even eat the same as they eat, right? And my tolerance for risk and for diversity and change is way higher. So I think that I'm just an anomaly. My mom actually signed up for the Divine Feminine Summit and listened to a lot of the interviews. So you did the 3-day live. We have the Divine Feminine Summit that had 21 interviews in 2000 and then 19 interviews in 2001. And she listened to, I don't know, a lot of the interviews and really liked them. She's on my mailing list and gets my emails. And then she also read, it was something that I did. And it was my book, The Art of Turning 50. She actually proofread my book. And it's not super controversial at all, and so she kind of accepts that I have my way of speaking about something and she has her way. And I think she also understands that in some ways they're the same. We're talking about this ineffable divine frequency, and she would say it as God the Father, maybe, or the Holy Ghost, and I would say it as an ineffable divine frequency, and she understands what I mean. The other day, she asked me to go to a Mother's Day luncheon at her church, and I said yes, because I knew that was important to her, and I was cracking up because, of course, any Mother's Day luncheon at a evangelical church is going to be actually a church service. You know, I'm like, can we not just have lunch and be in a circle and hold hands and say blessings on our mother? No, we can't. We have to do the same format that we would do on Sunday. And she goes to a Hispanic speaking church, even though she's not Hispanic, which I think is really cool. But other women spoke about how they weren't allowed to dance and that they could only dance in front of the church toward God with their arms like raised just in that the way that the Bible specifically directs. And so I felt like as I was listening to that, I felt the patriarchy in that church service. And I just felt like, well, there's no accident that I'm sitting here as a stand and also a frequency of the divine feminine. So I'm just going to hold that frequency. So I didn't like judge the situation. I just held that frequency inside myself of the liberation that we can feel when we can dance, when we can trust our wild side and our wild nature that is actually connected to earth and earth to God. So Yeah, I mean, we're finding ways to build bridges, and yeah, it's not always on the nose.
No, but it's also, I think, a sign of healing that, because I remember when I first was getting out of, you know, when I was deconstructing, and I really wanted to argue with my parents, my dad in particular, because he was pretty in your face to me about stuff, about, you know, my changing religious beliefs. And I so desperately wanted to argue back, like, you know, and here we are just locked. And I remember the day that I'm like, that's not my role. And if what he's doing works for him, like, who am I to judge that? My sister Carrie actually helped me to see that. But I think once you get to that point, it's really a tremendous sign of healing that we don't feel like we have to counter.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that when we're going up that ladder, like Carolyn Mace talks about how in the anatomy of spirit, how when you are evolving in your consciousness, you have to break off from the tribe, because the tribe is the lowest common denominator, and tribes don't change. It's the last thing to change, right? Because you have to get consensus from everyone. And then you've got your people that are like committed to not change. And my mom is like one of them. She could have been a really good mafia person. Like, she's totally committed to not changing and to the family stays. Okay. Right. So you have to break off. And part of that breaking off to assert your own identity is oftentimes like carving out and taking stands and like, no, that's bullshit. But then once you've integrated it and you know who you are, and I know who I am, I don't have to fight anymore.
Yes. Yes. Break free. Mm-hmm. Heal. Mm-hmm. Live a spiritually abundant life. That's our tagline. Kenlyn, you just set that up beautifully.
I love that.
So I would love to give you, I want to be sure that we save time to talk about some of the things that you are doing now. Don't you think, Deborah?
Absolutely.
I mean, we have been beneficiaries, but it's not common in a lot of places to have people doing what you're doing. So would you just tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you have going on around the Divine Feminine? We mentioned some of them. There may be others. And and more importantly, what that means. So like people hear Divine Feminine Summit, it's like, well, what does that mean? I actually had the same question last year. I just knew that if it had Divine Feminine in the title, I was probably going to be really interested.
Yes.
Like, what's that mean?
And I didn't even know that much. It was really sort of a foreign concept to me. So I was a complete newbie, Kenlyn, and you, forgive my use of the word, but you converted me. I saw something that I had never seen before, and it was great.
Convert. Oh, I'm so curious what you saw.
All of those women coming together all over the world in different ways, bringing with them different pasts, different presents, different hopes and dreams, but they all came together. I had never seen that before.
Yeah. And whether it was meditation or dance or, you know, all of those different things that you provided in your summit last summer. So cool. We just didn't have, Deborah and I joke, we didn't have the hair to keep up with the dancer, you know, who had the beautiful, I can't remember her name, but she had the beautiful, you know, long brunette hair.
Oh,
do you know
yes,
who I'm talking about?
That's my soul sister, Himalaya. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's yes. Exactly. So beautiful. Mm-hmm. We wish we had that kind of hair.
We tried to swing the hair and it just wasn't working.
I'm serious. I know. I feel the same way. She's definitely my soul sister. I know we've had, we feel like we've had many lifetimes together, and I feel at home, like as my soul as an Indian person with her.
She's wonderful.
And she also grew up as a Sikh. And so chanting Gurmukhi chants, which is what we chant in Kundalini yoga, is part of her native tongue. And so there's just a lot of symmetry between us. But you know, what I'm thinking for you two is the 2021 Divine Feminine Summit was completely different. So in 2020, in that 3-day live, that was fun. And what happened in 2021 even surprised me. So it's something that you were saying, Deborah, about learning something new. I'm learning all the time who she is, because she is the mystery and she's unfolding. Like in our seeing of her, she multiplies and expands. And so the 2021 summit that had 19 speakers, the first summit speaker that I interviewed was the Sacred Courtesan. And it was a woman named Saida Desilet, who teaches the jade egg and sacred sexuality. And I felt so lit up after that interview. I realized, oh, this is where we're going. Because in 2020, we were the energy of the transmissions from these 21 women that I curated was really foretelling the breakdown that was coming, that we didn't know was coming in 2020. We may have known, but we didn't know how it was coming. And it like the energy of Kali Ma, which is the archetypal goddess of death and rebirth. She was the most popular archetype in the 2020 summit. And then 2021 happens, and we're not really on death and rebirth anymore. We're on feminine embracing of our natural power from our embodiment and permission, deep permission to be who we are. That was the message that came through like a fractal in each of the speakers. So I'm learning, I'm getting the transmissions as it's happening, and my awareness of who she is starts to expand and open. So in my work as the Divine Feminine Inner Circle, we have three parts. We have self-mastery, purpose and clarity, and impact and income. So it's for women who want to make some kind of an impact in the world and want it to be maybe connected to their livelihood, but certainly want to contribute. And that's going to require something. And that's why we start with self-mastery. We start with understanding, like, what is the matrix in which we're operating that we can't see? We just think that's how the world is, rather than that's how it occurs to us through our lens. So we start deconstructing that. We go kind of in a death process, really. That's where we're at now. And then we start to, from there, create from a place called nothing. Who we want to be. Like, we're declaring who we want to be. We're inventing it. And all of that process is anchored in the truth that's resonant in our bodies. So I can have a lot of ideas, right? And they can sound really great and they can turn me on. But what are the ones in my body that fully light me up? Like, that separates that, then I know that's for me to explore if I choose, than just a quote good idea that makes sense. Oh, I should do that. We're like banishing the shoulds and we're going with, but where's the aliveness in your body? Because if you find that aliveness in your body, then that's a clue on the breadcrumb trail of your life to pour some energy into, to actually direct your masculine will toward, like you did. You know, there was an aliveness in this podcast, and then you got to direct your will and create action. And here we are.
Right. Here we are. But I would love to ask you about this, because part of what I did last year, and it came out of Divine Feminine Inner Circle, was, do you remember when you drew cards for people in that one session, and I wasn't there, and on the playback, I realized I had the same oracle deck that you were pulling cards from for people, pulled my own card, and it said, heal the dark wound, let love live. And I remember going, and that was right on the heels of the, you know, I say heels, maybe a couple of months difference of that inner child meditation where I just bawled. And I'm like, there's still clearly work to do around this. But what I realized is it was all rooted in my body. There were breadcrumbs that got me there. So I did a 90-day experiment trying to go deeper to figure out what was happening, because I felt so indifferent to my body. It wasn't that I hated it. I used to hate it. I used to loathe it. So I got into the place where I was feeling indifferent. But how you know, how can you fully integrate if you feel indifferent to such an important part of you? And so that 90 days really, really helped me. But as I'm listening to you talk, and by the way, Kenlyn, that was attached to core inner wounds of not feeling good enough, not feeling worthy, you know, just like not feeling lovable. And like, just so there was like this lack of self-love. But so as I'm hearing you talk about how important it is that we sort of can tap into our body, if you've grown up in a system that teaches you to treat your body as suspect or like it's judging you and blaming you for your body. It's so weird. Women's bodies are battlefields, like in patriarchal religion. It's hard to learn how to trust those things that light up in your body as you sort of describe it. What advice do you have for people to try to tap into that aliveness when their bodies have been, you know, when they're kind of shut down to it?
That's such an important thing that you raise, you know, because as children, if I asked my mom something, she wouldn't say, how does your body feel? What do you think is true? She would just say what the Bible said. So it was actually dissociating from my own experience and my own intelligence and then going to an outside source to tell me what to do. And that's how we get dogmatism. That's how we get fundamentalism. That's how we get people who are willing to kill people over ideas, because they're not embodied with, oh my God, that's another human being. I can't feel that human being. They're just over there representing a construct in my own mind. I don't even actually know what it means to be so, like, Muslim, for example. I don't even know that there's so many similarities between us. I'm just wanting to kill that idea, that belief over there. So the cost of not being embodied is actually really huge for our world. So I would say, to answer your question, that it was a process. A journey of 1,000 steps begins with the first step. And for me, one of the steps, and it was the Rolfing that I mentioned, the body work that I mentioned. And I believe that each person, when you have the intention to really know the truth and come home, you will have these opportunities like I had in Boulder of the Rolfing. Maybe you don't have Rolfing in your town. It's not a prescription. There's many ways to do it. So you get to just wake up to what is coming to you and then start to peel off the layers. And just as you would a lover, you are getting to know yourself and your body and its truth mechanisms. Like when your stomach tightens, or when you feel, or you make a sound, you start to notice. And so part of the inner circle, we're teaching women, instead of caretaking each other, like, oh, it's okay, you're really awesome and valuable, you know, that's great, but it doesn't land so much. If I don't believe I'm awesome and valuable, you telling me that, again, it's another outside source. So what we're doing is, you know, so we're witnessing each other. We're just saying, I witness you, I see you. That gives a certain trust of, like, your process is valuable and honorable, so keep going. And then what we're doing is, instead of popping up to our heads and forming beliefs about something, we're noticing how we feel about it. This part of my body closed. I noticed my heart started pounding. I noticed my throat started getting dry. And there you go, focusing on sensation as your way in. And just as any subtle practice in spirituality, like a yogic spiritual practice, is subtle. It's about mastery is about subtlety. And so when you start every day consistently checking in with yourself, noticing, scanning how you feel, you're going to start developing a subtlety with your body and mastery with your body. And you'll know, well, something feels off, something feels not true. And the feminine, I'm going to say this, the feminine is always right. Now, she can collapse into, you know, a conditioned pattern of blaming or that, but her initial response when something's off is always right. So I love that really, we are the repositories of truth, and the masculine and even our masculine sides get to understand that truth through following the sensations in the feminine.
So good. And I think one of the things that going deeper in your inner circle work did for me was sort of give me permission to do that. I think when people give I didn't even realize that I needed permission to do that. It's just that when somebody says it, it's like, oh, it's so strange, you know, and these little teachers that pop up, you've been one of my teachers, Kenlyn. Deborah has heard me talk about you a lot, and I am going to release a set of a few short videos that I, you know, about my 90-day experiment. And you're all over one of those videos.
That sounds pretty. I'm so honored, you know?
We all
get to walk each other home.
Yeah, and I do love that you use that, you know, that kind of that we witness each other. So your work in the divine feminine, I know for me and for lots of other people, you sort of, well, you're a guide, but you're a permission giver, and you're a witness, and there's so many positive things. And I know that we don't have very much time, but I do want to ask you one thing, which is, Deborah, you may have more, but, you know, one of the things that I had to do, well, when I was deconstructing, I went from the hard, unfeeling patriarchal God. I did a hard swing over to the divine feminine. And then I got to a place where they sort of met in the middle. Is that, so I'm hearing you talk about the divine masculine as it sort of, you know, relates to the divine feminine. Where does that land for you, that combination?
Oh my gosh, this is such a great topic. And we could go on and on, but I'll encapsulate that. Yes, it's, you know, we incarnated on planet Earth in duality. So we are, as the Hindus say, Shiva and Shakti. We are masculine and feminine, left and right, this and that. And, you know, God is oneness. And so the unity of that masculine and feminine inside of us, the integration of those, and even the choice to play in my masculine or the choice to play in my feminine requires a certain level of mastery and subtlety. So that the masculine is pure consciousness. It's stillness. It's death. It's the absolute. It's whole and complete. It needs nothing. It's the no thing. The feminine is the everything. It is the dance and play of form. And those two are consorts. You know, they're constantly playing, and we play with it inside of ourself, and we play with it in our partner, and we play with it in the world.
That's great. That was very beautifully done.
It sure was. I wish also that we had more time to talk with you, Kenlyn. It is fascinating. The good thing for our listeners and for us is that we have more access to you. And we're going to share your links to your website and some of your other materials on our site and through our podcast. But we want to thank you so much for joining us today. It was fabulous. And listeners, you can find Kenlyn at www.kenlyncolleen.com, Evolving Sisters on Instagram, and www.divinefemininesummit.com. We'll also link those for you in the show notes. So Kenlyn, again, thank you so much. It was fabulous and beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're so welcome. So honored to be here and be a part of this evolutionary conversation to really free people from any old constructs, really, into the liberation of being who and what they really are.
Thank you for listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast. We invite you to rate and review our show. And remember, you can find this interview and others on our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or anywhere you access podcasts. Don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and TikTok at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. You can find more information about us and our show on our website. Again, that's theincarceratedchristian.com. Until next time, go forth in love and light.